Mr. Rappel, good morning to you, and I apologize if I did not pronounce your client's last name properly.
It's just Torley, thank you.
Torley. You may proceed.
May I please report, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. My name is Mark Rappel, and I represent the appellant in this case, Jared Horley. It's our contention that the lower court erred in denying Mr. Horley's motion for his trial. This is a case in which Mr. Horley was convicted following a jury trial of the offense of aggravated DWI third offense. At trial, a blood draw result was introduced with a .195 BAC, which would be in excess of the .150 mark. The verdict by the jury was reached on, I believe, June 22nd. The day after the verdict was released, the United States Supreme Court decided Birchfield versus North Carolina and essentially affected evidence that was introduced at the trial of Mr. Horley, specifically the blood draw results that were taken in this case. The evidence suggests that the post-arrest chemical test advisement form was read to Mr. Horley before the blood draw was taken from him, and that advisement told Mr. Horley that he was required to submit to the blood draw, and if he didn't submit to the blood draw, he'd be charged with a separate crime. Since Birchfield has come down, the U.S. Supreme Court has made it clear that consenting to a blood draw under pain of prosecution is per se involuntary. And so we filed a motion for new trial that the court heard evidence and denied the motion for new trial. It's our position that the court abuses discretion in that regard. And I think one of the main issues in this case is going to be whether or not the good faith exception applies in this particular case.
Counsel, stated that the U.S. Supreme Court, since Birchfield, has made it clear that the requirement is per se involuntary.
Yes,
what's your authority for that?
Your Honor, when I said in that sense, I meant in Birchfield. Justice Alito said, quote, motorists cannot be deemed to have consented to submit to a blood test on pain of committing a criminal offense, end quote. And that...
Okay, so you're relying on
Birchfield. Yes, Your Honor.
There's nothing since then.
Yes, Judge. I meant since it got handed down. No subsequent cases by the U.S. Supreme Court, Your Honor.
All right.
But I think the big issue in this case is whether or not the good faith exception applies. If it was error for the blood draw results to come in, does the good faith exception somehow save that? And I don't believe it does for three reasons. One, the good faith exception does not fit into the consent exception to the warrant requirement. Two, Birchfield never said to do a good faith analysis on good faith consent cases. And number three, there appears to be Nebraska appellate authority that supports the position that good faith can't be applied in a context of a consent case. And what we're dealing with here, Your Honors, is the consent case is a unique exception to the warrant requirement. It's unlike any of the other recognized exceptions to the warrant requirement in that a citizen is allowing law enforcement to take something or do something that they may not otherwise be allowed to do.
Okay,
in that respect, it's unique from other exceptions.
You've described this as a consent case. Isn't this a mistake of law case? Doesn't the officer, when he gives the advisement that at the time is not unconstitutional, later turns out to be unconstitutional, isn't that a mistake of law?
I don't believe it is, Your Honor. And I don't believe Birchfield treated it as a mistake of law. It analyzed it under the consent exception to the warrant requirement. What makes this different is, again, and you're leading into my next point, much of the recognized applications of the good faith exception to other exceptions of the warrant requirement are in situations, just as you allude to, where the officer is relying upon, reasonably, upon the officer's understanding of a law, a statute, a warrant, something along those lines, where it's reasonable for the officer who has clean hands to say, I can rely upon this because someone else is telling me I have the authority to do this.
Doesn't the officer here have clean hands?
Judge, I think he was following the law that was in effect at the time. However,
isn't that what the good faith exception is all about?
No, Your Honor, not in the context of consent. And that brings my next point. If you look at the traditional application, if you're looking at a Leon search warrant, or you're looking at a scope of an arrest, search incident to arrest in Davis, or an officer pulls over somebody because dispatch gave him bad information that the person had a warrant, or when they actually didn't, those are completely different because the officer's actions are based solely upon the officer's understanding of the law. Consent is analyzed completely different. In a consent case, the focus is on whether or not the person actually gave voluntary consent. It's irrelevant whether or not the officer reasonably believed they gave voluntary consent. It's a matter of
isn't
law.
Suppression, isn't the prophylactic benefit of suppression to change what law officers would do?
Your Honor, if you you look at the case law in Nebraska, at least my understanding of how the consent law works, again, I agree with what you're saying if it's not in the context of a consent case, but in a consent case, it's a little different. If you look at
Do you have any case law supporting your contention?
Yes, I do, Judge. I believe, and I cite these in my case, I believe if you look at State versus Greece, G-R-I-E-S-S, it's an 11 Nebraska Appellate 389, 2002 Court of Appeals case here in Nebraska. In that case, Your Honor...
What was the page? 11?
It's 11 Nebraska Appellate 389.
Thank you.
2002, and it's in my reply brief, Your Honors. In that case, the sheriffs had an execution, a writ of execution to go onto somebody's property and take their mobile home from them. And the sheriff shows up with the writ of execution, hands it to the defendant. In response, the defendant handed his keys over. The officers then did an inventory search of the vehicle, and they found contraband inside the mobile home. The Court of Appeals in this state treated that as a consent case, and they held that the sheriff's actions demonstrated that he assumed, with the writ of execution, he had the authority to take the mobile home. The defendant presented law enforcement with the keys in response to what he thought he had to do, and he submitted to a show of authority, essentially, and the court in that case found that that was invalid consent. Even though the officer had a reasonable belief that that writ of execution gave him the right to go on this person's property and take it, consent cases are handled differently. And my position is that...
Did anyone raise the good faith issue in that case?
I don't see that it was, in fact, raised, Your Honor, but the good faith exception has been around. It preceded 2002. It's been around since Leon. It's been around for a long time. And in that case, the court said they didn't analyze it from the officer's perspective. Was he reasonable in relying upon the writ? They analyzed it from the perspective of the motive, the defendant, the citizen. Was his consent in fact voluntary? And my question for the court is, how can there ever be good faith if the consent is involuntary? That's the difference between what I'm arguing in this case. This is not a case where we're arguing the consent was invalid. The consent was involuntary. How can involuntary consent ever be...
Well, okay.
Private Birchfield, did the officer require consent? Before Birchfield was decided, did you have to have consent to get a blood draw?
They had the implied consent laws, Your Honor, in Birchfield. Similar, and this was in North Dakota, similar to Nebraska. You don't take the law, you can be charged with a crime. And so, yes. And that's my point. If you look at consent, it's just way different than any other exception to the warrant requirement.
Counsel, does the exception to the exclusionary rule or good faith, does that apply to both administrative hearings and criminal law proceedings?
No, Judge. The exclusionary rule only applies to criminal proceedings. It does not apply to administrative hearings, which is, again, why I think the good faith exception was not...
So if there's a bad breath test for whatever reason, didn't read the implied consent, you're saying that breath test cannot be used in an administrative hearing?
I'm saying it can be used in an administrative hearing because the exclusionary rule doesn't apply to administrative hearings. But in a criminal context, it could not be used because you do have the exclusionary rule.
Right, but my point is the exception to the exclusionary rule applies in both. You can use that bad breath test in an administrative proceeding, can't you?
I don't believe you can. My understanding of the Administrative Procedures Act and this court's case law is that you cannot use that in that context. But the problem with a consent case, if you do a sleight of hand and all of a sudden you analyze a consent case from the officer's perspective rather than the rightful analysis of the citizen's perspective, was it voluntary or was it not, then that's where I think things get off the rails. And I would ask the court to reserve the rest of my time.
Okay, well... You're saying that Birchfield places the good faith exception in one corner and the lack of consent or invalid consent in another. And that if you're faced with the exclusionary rule and you're faced with the lack of consent trumps any exclusionary rule.
Correct, Judge.
I won't take any more of your time.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Liss, good morning to you.
Good morning. Liss Clark, Nathan Liss, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Appalachian State of Nebraska. Primary dispute here is whether the good faith exception applies. I submit that it does for the reasons in the brief, as well as the brief of the state we had filled in our argument yesterday. I'm not going to rehash my arguments. I'll focus on the two primary arguments made by the appellant in the reply brief and here today. As far as their first argument regarding the good faith exception and it being inapplicable, They assert that the good faith exception can't apply because it requires consent to be valid. In other words, according to the appellant, they're intertwined, and since consent is no longer viable under Birchfield, the good faith exception isn't either. We obviously disagree with the premise about consent no longer being viable. I'll get to that in a minute, but more importantly, for purposes of the good faith exception, we would note that it's not in any way contingent on consent. Good faith and consent are separate and distinct legal principles. Consent is a search exception to the Fourth Amendment, and if established, there is no Fourth Amendment violation. The good faith exception, on the other hand, occurs where we have a Fourth Amendment violation, and we're looking at whether or not the exclusionary rule applies. They're separate and distinct. They're not intertwined. Our Fourth Amendment jurisprudence makes this clear, as does Birchfield itself. Footnote 9 of the Birchfield decision specifically states, if the court on remand finds that Balin did not voluntarily consent, then go on to consider the issue of the exclusionary rule. They're separate and distinct, and we maintain that the good faith exception does apply in this case regardless of consent.
So it trumps the consent issue?
Yeah, we would submit that it does. If this court finds that good faith applies, I think consent is irrelevant. It's separate and distinct. It's a separate issue.
Excuse me, that's fundamental to your argument. Consent becomes irrelevant.
Yes.
In essence, for your perspective, for the appellant to prevail, it would have had to have been the case that no reasonable officer could objectively have relied on Nebraska's implied consent statute in directing the motorist to take the blood test.
Precisely. And I don't see how we can...
To take the test or suffer another crime.
Right.
A refusal.
Right, exactly.
Right, but nonetheless, it comes down to could an officer for...
Or phrased another way, use the apparent standard form that everybody was using to advise someone of their need or...
Correct. If an officer's use of that is objectively and reasonably...
That applies to all actions that occurred prior to Birchfield.
Right.
After Birchfield, that this...
Good faith is gone. Right.
So are these... There's just a limited number of cases that these principles will apply to, in your view? They're going to age out of this...
Eventually, although
courts.
I do think it's conceivable, we could see, a number of cases. There are certainly some more significant cases, such as a manslaughter, motor vehicle homicide, DUI causing serious bodily injury, that are still out there pending with pre-Birchfield blood draws. Mm-hmm. Some inmates who are incarcerated for some of those more serious offenses will probably seek litigation. Plus, in what might be barely a subsequent DUI case, where you have priors that somebody may want to attack, they may attempt to do that. They can't do it in an enhancement proceeding. That'll be an impermissible collateral attack. But say they file either state habeas and say that, well, that prior judgment's void, or under the common law remedy, the only way they...
Okay, because I think what you and I are exploring and other members of the court, what's the... If the court were to agree that the good faith exception applies and in this set of facts in front of us, a reasonable officer would have thought the consent and business was fine, right? What's the breadth of this on subsequent cases? And that universe of subsequent cases.
I think it shuts the door, and that's precisely why we're asking you to reach that conclusion in the case, as well as the Hatfield decision from yesterday.
Thank you.
The only other point I'll make briefly on the good faith exception, and this was discussed somewhat yesterday too, there seemed to be some question as to whether or not that should be reversed, and maybe I was misreading the court's questions, but it seemed to be that there were some questions as to whether or not that should go back for the district court to address that issue. And I don't think it needs to. Again, I would reiterate, we're asking this court to reach that decision. From a factual standpoint, I don't think there's anything the district court needs to do on that issue, because the only fact that would really be relevant to our analysis here would be, did the officer rely on our implied consent statute in requiring the blood test in question? We know that to be true. I mean, the advisement itself tells us that. That's done pursuant to our implied consent statute, our implied consent scheme in our case.
Review for me. What is the status of this case? Was there a guilty plea or a trial or?
This was a trial.
This is a trial.
Right.
It's all done.
Yes.
Yes, but
yes.
I think part of your comment is warranted, but I think yesterday in another matter, I think we were also bleeding in issues of the procedure of that case, which was an error proceeding.
Right. I guess
the effect of our ruling and all that implied.
Right, right. I understand that. And I guess part of what
this,
I'm getting
this
at here
is... This is a direct appeal.
This is direct appeal.
It is. I'm just, I guess, and the point I was getting at here is I'm acknowledging the district court in this case in denying the appellant's motion for new trial did not make any factual findings.
Okay.
And I took a long time to get here. I apologize. But the point I was making is I don't think that should preclude this court from doing a good faith analysis. I apologize. Belated point. If there are no further questions on good faith, I will briefly go into the appellant's argument on the viability of consent in light of Birchfield. They assert Birchfield created a categorical per se rule that blood draws are involuntary and invalid if it's obtained with an invalid PACTA. This is simply not true. The portion of the opinion that they're relying on where it says that voters cannot be deemed to have consented to submit to a blood test for pain of committing a criminal offense, that language is used solely in the context of implied consent and rejecting the notion that implied consent would carry the day and establish consent for Fourth Amendment purposes. And in the opinion in that regard, Birchfield doesn't say, nor does it suggest that blood draws are categorically invalid. They're obtained with an invalid PACTA. As I mentioned yesterday, one of the three cases was reversed for determination of consent despite an invalid PACTA. As I was discussing with Justice
Kelly. Give us a scenario where consent somehow survives.
The hypo that comes to mind for me would be an officer arrests somebody for DUI. The individual says, okay, officer, what happens now? The officer says, well, typically we're going to have you submit to a chemical test. Usually do either a breath test or a blood test. The person says, I'd like to do a blood test. The officer says, I mean, is that what you want to do? Are you requesting that? I need your consent if you want to do that. The person says, yes. Says, well, here's a form. Fill out a consent form. The person doesn't. Then you go to the hospital and you read this standard advisement form that we used to use before Birchfield that says, hey, I'm requiring you to submit and failure to do so potentially subject you to a crime. I think in that situation, I guess I wouldn't have any trouble saying consent there was perfectly valid and voluntary prior to that advisement ever taking place. So I think there
it wasn't, it wasn't a coercion is what you're saying, that he wasn't coerced by this other consent form that says if you don't, you're going to have to commit another crime.
Right, right. And I think that would be a key point in the analysis in terms of whether or not the advisement negates the validity of consent there. And so I think in that hypo, it would certainly be a good argument that consent would survive. But in many circumstances, it won't. We acknowledge that. I'm not saying it would categorically by any means.
Your hypothetical is sort of at one extreme of the range of possibilities. At the other end would be the defendant who says, I'm not taking any tests, and then is given the implied consent advisement and then submits to the test. And then in between are the ambiguities, right?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
With that said, I really have nothing else to add on the briefs and said here today. No further questions. Yes, confirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
Yes,
55 seconds, Mr. Rappel.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree that the U.S. Supreme Court did address three different exceptions to the warrant requirement: consent, exigent circumstances, and search intent to arrest. And they did make a categorical per se involuntary finding. I think that's clear in the language. And I would also ask the court to look at
and why did they remand the implied consent advisement case for further proceedings to determine consent under the totality of the circumstances?
Because, Your Honor, that there was three separate defendants in, they were consolidated in the appeal. One of those defendants was a guy named Balin. Balin was an administrative license revocation appeal.
So
the footnote specifically directed, since it's an administrative appeal, make a finding whether or not the exclusionary rule applies. And that feeds into my next argument that the U.S. Supreme Court did not remand the issue for finding a good faith exception to the warrant requirement. It could have. It showed that they had the ability to do it. They did it in Balin. They didn't do it in Birchfield. And importantly, Justice Alito, if I may finish your question, Justice
sure.
Alito was the author of the majority opinion in Birchfield. He's also the author of the United States versus Davis opinion, which was the last U.S. Supreme Court opinion to find that the good faith exception applied to search incident to arrest in response to Arizona versus Gantt. So if any justice on the U.S. Supreme Court had the experience and knowledge to remand it back and tell the court to make a good faith analysis, Justice Alito would have done that, and he didn't do that. And in Nebraska, again, Nebraska Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court has never found that the consent exception to the warrant requirement is applicable to the good faith exception. So I'd ask the court to consider the unique nature of the consent exception and find that this consent was involuntary and analyze it from that perspective, not the officers, and find that the lower court erred in denying the motion.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the day.